The December 14th meeting of the Coastal Regional MPO will now come to order. The core MPO is holding in-person meeting with a virtual option for non-voting members and members of the public. For staff, board members, and members of the public who are participating, today's agenda is broken down into the following items. Approval of the agenda, committee reports, action item to be presented by the staff, other business, status report on current projects activity, information report, other public comments, notes by the chairman, excuse me, and then adjournment. For each agenda action item, the staff will make a presentation. The board may then ask questions of the staff for clarification. During the public comment section, the floor will be open to the public to discuss matters on the agenda. For members of the public, if you wish to comment on an item that the board is considering, use the raise your hand feature on your screen. For persons attending the meeting in person who desire to speak, staff will provide you with a speaker card. At the appropriate time, I will recognize you and staff will direct you to the microphone. At the end of your allotted time, as determined by me, you will be notified that your time has expired and I will recognize the next speaker. The meeting will now be called to order. First item on the agenda is the approval of the agenda. Is there a motion? Is there a second?
Second.
All right, now let me refresh you now. So yes, please say your name when you're making a motion and when you're making a second. All right, let's do it again. Yes, motion to approve the agenda.
Tanya Milton, so moved.
Tom Hutcherson, second.
Been properly motioned and second that the agenda be approved. Are you ready for the question? No questions. All in favor, please signify by stating your name and your preference on the vote.
Tanya Milton, yes.
Les Fussell, yes.
Tom Hutcherson, yes.
Bob Miley, yes.
Pamela Bernard, yes.
Sean Gillen, yes.
Nick Palumbo, yes.
Faye DeMassimo, yes.
Tim Callanan, yes.
Casey Langford, yes.
All right. The chairman, yes. At this time, we'll go to committee reports and verbal. Let me, we have a report from the CAC. Dr. Bradley. Morning.
Sorry about that. The CAC met and they met with a quorum, endorsed all of the action items, as well as hosted elections for new officers. Those are all the updates I have for CAC.
TCC.
Good morning. The TCC met last Thursday, December 8th, and went through an agenda similar to today's. All the action items, including endorsement of the 2024 draft UPWP, the MTP amendments, and the TIP amendments were all approved. We also held elections for next year and elected Les Fussell of Richmond Hill as a TCC chairman for 2023 and William Sedgwick of CAT as the vice chair.
Okay, thank you, ma'am. Our executive director's report.
Just want to let you know that we're still waiting for the TMA numbers, and once we receive that, we'll be reaching out to you to discuss amendments to the bylaws as needed.
Okay. Then we go to action items. May I get a motion and a second to approve the the minutes of the November 2nd, 2022 meeting?
Sorry, this is Les Fussell. I'd like to have a correction to the minutes. In the minutes, the voting members still list Mark Ott for Richmond Hill. However, Mark Ott is no longer a member. I would like to have that replaced with my name, please.
Okay.
After that, that's the only correction I saw. I've made the motion to accept the minutes with that correction.
Is there a second?
Tanya Milton, second.
Been properly motioned and second that the minutes be adopted with the necessary corrections that was made, all right, concerning Richmond Hill. Let me begin by asking for your vote. Please state your name and your vote.
Tanya Milton, yes.
Les Fussell, yes.
Tom Hutchinson, yes.
Bob Miley, yes.
Pamela Bernard, yes.
Sean Gillen, yes.
Nick Palumbo, yes.
Faye DeMasmo, yes.
Tim Callahan, yes.
Casey Langford, yes.
Okay, and the chairman, yes. So move. All right, we go to item number two, which is the 2045 MPT amendment. This item was advertised for public hearing. We need to open for public comments. All right, is there a motion? You want to go first?
Yeah, I would make a presentation first, and then we can open the public hearing.
All righty.
Okay, the 2045 MTP amendments for the Talmadge Bridge Talmadge Bridge project. We actually started the first step back in August because at that time we didn't know what kind of fiscal impact this inclusion of this project will have on the current 2045 MTP. So the board authorized the staff to do further analysis. So between August and November, we actually had several coordination meetings with GDOT. And then we found out, so currently this project is proposed as a maintenance project, and GDOT still need to find out what exactly they would do with the project. And then there's also a revised cost estimate. So the preliminary engineering phase is actually $14 million. And then the construction phase is about $175 million. So what we when we had the discussion with GDOT, and GDOT indicated that when we developed the 2045 MTP, we actually used some kind of assumptions to about the revenues. And so GDOT suggests that we make adjustment to the assumptions because we did receive additional funds from the new funding legislation, the IIJA. And then GDOT also has additional funds to cover the state match. So what they are anxious to do is to include the preliminary engineering phase into fiscal 2023 and to find out what needs to be done. So in order to accommodate that, we have to include the project into the 2045 plan because the TIP is a subset of the long-range transportation plan. And also because the major concern for the MTP amendment is to keep fiscal constraint. Since we are making assumption changes indicating that we're going to have additional revenues to cover this project, so we should be okay. So including this project into the 2045 MTP is not going to kick out any of the projects already in the 2045 MTP, so we should be okay with it. That means the 2045 MTP will be fiscally constrained. And going through the committee process, the CEC members actually indicated because this project will mostly consider the needs from the Georgia port. So they suggest that we actually contact Georgia court or GDOT contact Georgia court, Georgia port authority, so they can kick in some money for the implementation of the project. So not only use the federal dollars and state dollars, but also use some GPA money. So that's the comment that we received for the process. That's it. So basically including it will not impact the financial balance. So we're able to accommodate the amendments.
Okay. Any questions from any board member concerning the proposal from GDOT and the state about the Talmadge Bridge and the study and things need to be? Any comments? All right. You can see on based upon your what they're guessing. This is a maintenance project at this point.
Yes.
And the estimated cost will be $175 million with $140 million coming from the federal?
IIJA and right. The state match, yes.
Then the state match is $35 million.
The state match is a $35 million plus 2.8.
Plus the 2.8.
Yeah, plus 2.8, yes.
All right. So and those are slated to be put into the 2023 and 2025.
Yes.
Okay. Any questions now? Anyone have any questions from there? From the board? Okay. So hearing no questions from the board, now we can now open it up for public comment. All right. So this is a public hearing. Am I correct? Okay. So do we have anyone from the public to want to comment? All right. I'm sure because they touched bases with me yesterday. Okay, let me do this first. Let me have a motion to close the public hearing.
So moved. Les Fussell.
Nick Palumbo, second.
There's been proper motion and second that the public hearing on the Talmadge Ridge be closed. They're ready for the question. Hearing none, please cast your votes.
Tanya Milton, yes.
Les Fussell, yes.
Tom Hutchison, yes.
Bob Miley, yes.
Pamela Bernard, yes.
Sean Gillen, yes.
Nick Palumbo, yes.
Faye DeMasmo, yes.
Tim Callahan, yes.
Casey Langford, yes.
Okay, and the chairman, yes. Let me ask this too, knowing from yesterday's conversation, do we have anybody from GDOT here? Or are they coming virtually?
Actually, I think Casey mentioned the project manager on this from GDOT is online, right?
Right.
Let me do this. I'm setting you up now. All right. I'm taking myself off the hot seat and I'm setting you up. The news media is going to talk to you about this after the meeting.
All right. Okay.
And I'd much rather you give them the information than me give them the information. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So the young lady is sitting right there, WTOC. All right. I just want to give you a heads up. I give you some time to get ready for her. So you see who you're going to be interviewing? All right. So rather than ask me the questions, ask her, ask him. All right. Thank you. All right. Let's move on. Ready to go?
Yeah. Can we? We already closed the public hearing.
Right.
Is the board ready to vote on this for approval?
Oh yes. I'm sorry. I'm glad you straightened me out because I'm getting ahead of myself. We need a motion to approve.
Motion to approve. Faye DeMasmo.
Nick Palumbo, second.
All right, you heard the motion to approve and heard the second. All right, ready for the question? Please signal.
Tom Milton, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Les Fussell, yes.
Tom Hutchison, yes.
Bob Miley, yes.
Pamela Bernard, yes.
Sean Gillen, yes.
Nick Palumbo, yes.
Faye DeMasmo, yes.
Tim Callahan, yes.
Casey Langford, yes.
And the chairman, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, let us now move on to we wanted to do 3 and 4 in reverse order. Did you already reverse them?
I have already inverted
in
final agenda. Yes.
Okay. So let's now go to the draft year 2024.
TIP amendments.
Yes. Yeah. All right. This also will require that we do a public hearing, right? Okay.
Hello again.
Yes, ma'am.
I will be presenting the December TIP amendments for fiscal year 2021-2024. We received TIP amendments from GDOT, City of Savannah, and Chatham Area Transit. I believe we had about 16 amendments for December. So the first one, Wakota just, no, this is not the one. The Truman Linear Park Trail Phase B, the request came from GDOT to update the construction costs for fiscal year 2023. And I just got a note here a moment ago that cost may go down. But it has not been confirmed by GDOT, so we're just going to continue what we have, and this item may come up again in the future to revise. For State Route 404 SPUR.
Slow down a minute. All right, let me stop you.
All right.
Because some folks may not understand what you just said. I do, because we discussed it yesterday. But go ahead and tell them what the estimated cost is, and when you say go down, all right?
Okay, so the estimated cost is like almost $7 million that you see here. but the cost may go down, and I do not have the confirmation of what that cost is for going down, because it has not been confirmed by GDOT. But once that confirmation comes from GDOT, I'm sure we will be seeing this item again. We just want to move forward with the cost that you see here today.
Everybody on the same page that she's on now? Right, you see what she's talking about?
And the cost is $6,790,175.
Yes, that's the construction cost for fiscal year 2023.
Right. See, I want to make sure that we're on the same page as you're going.
Yes.
That's my only reason for stopping you. You may continue. Thank you.
All right. For the next project, we have State Route 404 SPUR at Talamay Memorial Bridge. This is the one that Wakota just brought to you all to amend into the long-range transportation plan. And now we need to amend it into our short-range plan, which is the TIP. And it's just to add the PE phase for fiscal year 2023 for the project as well. And the amount is $14 million. The next project we have is Chevis Road Improvement Project, and this one is for shifting of funding, just shifting the right-of-way funding from fiscal year 2023 to 2025. For the Garrod Avenue Improvement Project, it's also a shifting of funding. We are the request is to shift funding from for right-of-way phase from 2023 to 2024. It as well as for the construction phase for shift the funding from 2024 to 2025. Also, this project was awarded Y230 funds for fiscal year 2024 right-of-way phase. Next project, City of Savannah Traffic Control Center, remove the Y230 funds for construction in fiscal year 2023 and replace with all local funds.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Before I don't want to jump around the agenda. I do have a question regarding this item.
Okay. Let's try to get the questions in as you go. That'll be the best thing to do, so we won't have to bring you back and forth. Okay.
Okay. Well, I'll just take a pause after each one. But
go ahead.
Chairman, just a quick question, and this is a friendly question to help assist the City of Savannah. We've been striving for many years to build a real-time traffic control center that clearly benefits the City of Savannah, but benefits all of Chatham County, because if you've driven through Savannah, you know we have a little bit of traffic out there. But we're curious as to why the Y230 funds were removed from this TIP amendment. We believe it was a $300,000 to $400,000 request for support. But we're just curious as to why it was removed. We are requesting that it be continued, but we were hoping to get some clarity from staff to help us out.
All right. I think Wakota helped it.
Yes. When City of Savannah applied for the Y230 funds, and according to the regulations, it is eligible. This project traffic control center is eligible under ITS. But GDOT has some kind of administrative procedure that I have to go through, and I have been working with Robbie back and forth and with Stephen Henry from the City Engineering Department. So eventually GDOT decided you have to move the money, flex the money from Federal Highway Administration to Federal Transit Administration before the funds can be authorized. So basically the GDOT authorizing the funding has become a problem. In that case, the City of Savannah has already done the pre-bidding. They already have the room set up, so they just need to purchase the equipment and then hire staff members to operate the TCC. So they just cannot wait. And then the GDOT procedure has become so much, and the total number is $260,000 that we're talking about. So City of Savannah just decided that, okay, we have the money, we don't want to wait. So we would just release the money back to the Y230 part. So it's just a hiccup at the GDOT administrative procedure. So, but I mean, we can release that funds, but you can still, I mean, we're not going to lose that funds from our area. So they're still in our pot, so it can be reallocated. When you have other projects like Project Durant, you can still apply for that funds.
And Mr. Palumbo, Melanie Wilson, Executive Director, we also spoke at length with Heath Lloyd, the assistant city manager, regarding what was going on with these funds. And we talked about alternatives. So your staff is well aware of what is happening with this fund and our removal.
Yeah, actually, the procedure of getting the funds authorized has given myself, Robbie, everybody else, Stephen Henry, PTSD. So it's basically, it was a headache just to get the funds authorized. So we decided, okay, we're not going to pursue this.
Well, I appreciate y'all's diligent work and certainly don't want to route you around to human resources just because of an application. But thank you for helping point us in the right direction. Just a quick follow-up question. If the city were to pursue this and just get it implemented, because it is a small funding gap, would we be eligible for some form of reimbursement after it's completed or no? Okay.
No, you're going to use all local funds right now.
Well, you can't win if you don't play, so it was worth a shot.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Only thing I can tell you, good try. Yeah. All right. And please, all of you now, all of the board members, if you have questions while she's going through, I think what Alderman Palumbo said is good to catch her then they have to go back down through the session. So you don't mind, okay?
No, so I don't mind. It's 16.
So if you will give it and then just give a pause and let's see if we get those questions while we're on that particular item, okay?
Yes.
Thank you. All right.
Proceed. Any more questions, comments
more questions on
that
on this
item?
Okay.
All right. For the next project, we have I-95 at Airways Ave interchange improvements. This project was awarded Y230 funds for fiscal year 2023 for the PE phase. Question, comments? All right. So the next couple of ones I'm going to read off will all will be amended either from the award in Y230 or Y301. So next project, State Route 26/US-80 Bridge over Bull River Road, awarded Y230 funds for fiscal year 2024 right away phase. Questions, comments?
Sean, he's good.
The next couple following projects currently do not have a project number. But that we will hope to have one in the future. State Route 204 Access Study was awarded Y230 funds for fiscal year 2023 for the PE phase. Any questions or comments?
All right.
What phase of 204?
It's going to be between King George Boulevard and US 17.
Okay, so that's my area of concern.
Yes,
thank
ma'am.
You. Mm-hmm. There was a recommendation made by GDOT to close the intersection at that light. The people, the residents in Grove Hill rejected that recommendation. So I just want to know, where do we go from there? Do they continue to look at it or?
GDOT, but it's my understanding that they're kind of holding off for right now and maybe just continuing to look at it. But it's my understanding that they're not intending to make any changes at this time. And so we're hoping that this study will help provide some short-term and long-term recommendations that we can provide as an alternative to GDOT.
Thank you.
Okay. All right.
Next item, State Route 25 Corridor Study. This project was awarded Y230 funds for fiscal year 2023 for the PE phase. Questions or comments? All righty. Mm-hmm. The next project, President Street Railroad Crossing Elimination Project, was awarded Y230 funds for fiscal year 2023 for the PE phase. Any questions or comments?
All right.
Next one, Chatham Area Transit of State of Good Repair Fleet Replacement was awarded Y230 funds for fiscal year 2024 for construction. Any questions or comments? All right, the next project, Ivy and Linwood's sidewalks was awarded Y230 funds for fiscal year 2024 for the PE phase, utility, and construction. Questions or comments? All righty. Next one is the Green Island Multipurpose Trail. This project was awarded Y301 funds for fiscal year 2023 for the PE phase. Any questions or comments?
Now, that's the one we're going to have to rename, right?
Yes, this is the one that has come up.
Yeah, this is the one that comes up in contention because of the name Green Island Multipurpose Trail. So we're going to have to, how did you say, yes, sir, Walker? We're going to have to just add something to the name, or how are we going to distinguish it?
It should have road on there. It should be Green Island Road.
I think we might want to change the Green Island Road Multipurpose Trail off Diamond Causeway.
Right.
So it doesn't get confused with the Green Island itself.
Right.
So just give it a more specification.
And so I'm going to ask the county engineer, Ms. Donata knows, to get with you all so we can get that wording straight, all right? So that we don't have that confusion, because there are two different phases of what's happening out at Green Island. Am I right? And that's why we have to distinguish with the name. That's why we had the problem we're having, because of what it says, multipurpose trail.
Until it enters the GDOT system, the final name is subject to change. I think GDOT normally gave us the final name of us, but when we finalize the TIP amendment report and send it to GDOT, we will make sure it says Green Island Road Multipurpose Trail off Diamond Causeway, so it doesn't confuse with the island itself.
Right. Okay.
Any additional questions or comments? Next project, Tied to Town / Middle Ground Road phase was awarded Y301 funds for fiscal year 2023 for the PE phase. Any questions or comments? Next project, these are various transit improvement projects. It was to add the AOPP and ARP funded studies to fiscal year 2023 in the transit section.
Okay.
Any questions or comments? All righty. Those are all the TIP amendments that I have for December to amend in our 2021-2024 TIP. If you want to see any particular project, I can scroll down to them. Other than that, I will request that you all approve the TIP amendments.
Okay, now before we approve them, we must have the public hearing.
Yes.
All right, do we have anyone sign up for public hearing? All right, so then let's have a motion to close the public hearing, since we don't have anybody from the public want to motion.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Second, Nick Palumbo.
Probably motion and second that we close the public hearing. Are you ready for the question? Please signify your vote.
Tanya Milton, yes.
Les Fussell, yes.
Tom Hutchison, yes.
Bob Miley, yes.
Yes.
Sean Gillen, yes.
Nick Palumbo, yes.
Faye DeMassimo, yes.
Tim Callahan, yes.
Casey.
And Chairman, yes.
Dr. Chavez,
yes. Who's that? Dr. Chavez, okay.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Bob Miley, I make a motion that we approve the TIP amendments as presented.
The second, Sean Gillen.
Probably motion and second that we approve the TIP amendment as presented. Are you ready for the question? Please signify your vote.
Tanya Milton, yes.
Les Fussell, yes.
Tom Hutchison, yes.
Bob Miley, yes.
Pamela Bernard, yes.
Sean Gillen, yes.
Nick Palumbo, yes.
Faye DeMassimo, yes.
Tim Callahan, yes.
Casey Linkford, yes.
And the chairman, yes. All right.
Dr. Chavez, yes.
Chavez, yes. Okay, so that take care of that. And then I'll, later on in the process, though, you will get a report with GDOT, who signs the numbers, the code, the GDOT assigns that to us?
Yes.
Yeah, the numbers, yeah.
Yes, GDOT, the project numbers.
All right, so as soon as you get that, then it will go out to the board letting them know. All right, but those are monies that have already been awarded.
Yes.
All right, okay. Just want to make sure everybody's there. All right, we're going to other business. Do we have any other business?
We actually have draft fiscal 2024 UPWP.
Okay.
The process of developing the UPWP is like normally in December. We present to the board and advisory committees so that you can look at it and give us comments and then endorse us to send the preliminary draft to Federal Highway Administration, FTA, and GDOT for a 30-day review period. And when they send us the comments, we address the comments and we will send you the revised draft in February for final adoption. So I'm just going to outline what's included in the fiscal year 2024 draft UPWP. So I'm just going to focus on what we're going to work on, the major focus areas. So as you know, that we are updating the 2050 MTP. So that will be definitely a major work element. And then we are also going to complete the congestion management process update. So that will be also a focus area. We expect to have the new TIP adopted by June of next year. So for fiscal 2024, which start on July 1st, 2027, we will probably maintain the existing TIP. And also we still have several studies to wrap up. So we have the urban flooding model and the fleet plan update to wrap up. And so we are going to, both studies probably will be wrapped up between July 1st, 2023 to October 31st. So we're going to have that wrap up. And several other studies are going to start either kick off or wrap up as well. One of them is the US 80 corridor study. The consultant is over here, so they're going to do a presentation soon. And then as you are aware that Chatham County got awarded the money for three studies, the 204 access management, not access, 204 access study, 25 US 17 corridor study, and the Preston Street railroad cross elimination project. So Chatham County can start RFP process. And then as soon as GDOT authorized the funds and then execute the contract, we expect to start the studies to probably kick off in maybe April or May of this year. So that means the bulk of the work will be done in fiscal year 2024. So the staff work over here is to just coordinate with Chatham County on those studies. So those would be our focus. And we also have to address the continuously coming out the NOFO notice for funding opportunities for the IIJA, and then release the guidance. So we have to implement the new federal funding legislation. So those would be the major tasks for fiscal year 2024. And I'm just going to show you the budget for that. So I revised the budget a little bit this year, reorganized it. So this part you show over here is the staff budget. So we are going to use the about $436,000. That's the federal formula planning funds. And then with the local match, the highway portion is about $545,000. And for the section 5303, we have about $176,000. And with the local match and the state match, so we have about $222,000. So the total budget for staff just to operate or the MPO operation is about $765,000. So these would be the money to cover the MPO staff, like updating the MTP, updating the freight plan, updating the CMP, having all these meetings and reaching out to the public and collecting data. So that will be covered with this budget, $765,000. And as I mentioned, there are other studies that are ongoing and the MPO staff are coordinating with the agencies. So one of them is CAT. And so CAT, we actually putting additional funds for fiscal 2024 for CAT to purchase the remix on the license. That's about $35,000. And then CAT is doing the transit development plan, master transit plan, and the AARP study and the AARP study. So they have their different funding sources. And these funding are listed over here for information because MPO staff is not using these funds. So CAT is using these funds to do the studies. So we are coordinating with them. So what the staff spending was the only $765,000. So the CAT total is about $1.5 million. And then there are several other highway, for the highway portion, this money will be used to cover the consultant cost, like freight plan, urban flooding model study, US 80 corridor study, and the three new studies Chatham County is going to start. And these will be used to cover the consultant cost. So the money to cover the consultant cost for the highway studies about $1.835 million. So this is the budget for fiscal year 2024. So you can see staff actually use that to leverage the total is about $4.1 million. So any questions on this?
Any questions now for staff? None.
Okay, so we will ask the board to just approve so that we can send it out to FHWFT and GDOT for 30-day review.
All right, may I have a motion to approve?
So moved, Miley.
Tom Hutcherson, second.
Probably motion and second that we adopt and reports be sent to GDOT. Are you ready for the question? Any questions? All right, please cast your votes.
Tanya Milton, yes.
Les Fussell, yes.
Tom Hutcherson, yes.
Bob Miley, yes.
Pamela Bernard, yes.
Sean Gillen, yes.
Nick Palumbo, yes.
Faye DeMassimo, yes.
Tim Callanan, yes.
Casey Langford, yes.
All right, and the chairman, yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Dr. Shabazz, yes. Right, Dr. Shabazz, I keep forgetting that. All right, keep me on task. Thank you. Are you ready to go to the status reports? All right. Metropolitan Transportation Plan update, draft and goal.
Okay. Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I'll be giving a brief presentation on the 2050 Metropolitan Transportation Plan update. Okay, so for the Moving Forward Together plan, we have had a survey running, and that survey was incredibly important because it's being used to update the goals and objectives for the Metropolitan Transportation Plan. And this is just going to be a brief presentation, just going over some general survey results and how the overall survey impacted the goals and objectives. As of November 21st, we have received 409 survey responses, and those 409 responses are what we use to update the goals and objectives. The survey is still open and we are still receiving results, but for the purposes of the draft goals and objectives, we kind of cut off this end date for November 21st for updating those goals and objectives. And again, this survey was available in four languages, and it covered an array of transportation topics such as roadways, bikes, pedestrians, public transit, equity, and resilience. So now I'm just going to go into some general survey results, not the results to every single question, but some of the ones that stuck out. So in general, respondents want to maintain and repair roadways, infrastructure, and facilities. As shown here, this was an incredibly popular answer choice. There is significant interest in local rail service and public transportation. As you can see here, these are one of the most popular answer choices, with improving roadways being the most popular, but despite most people driving within the Savannah area, there's still heavy interest in public transit. Most respondents want bike lanes that are protected by a barrier and greenways that support multiple modes of non-motorized transportation. So people really prefer or have a preference toward bikeways that are separated from roadways and motorists. 67% of respondents prioritize increasing green and nature-based infrastructure, and 74% of respondents prioritize identifying and targeting high-need population areas where transit investments should be prioritized. So the red is essentially how we've updated the goals and objectives according to a lot of the survey results that the survey responses that we received. So we added increasing resilience of infrastructure to reduce floating on roadways. And that's just because a lot of survey respondents made references to roadway flooding as an issue. For access and connectivity, we added some language on connectivity for bike and pedestrian networks. ensuring that infrastructure is in a state of good repair, as many respondents discussed how sidewalks are often cracked or uneven. We also mentioned rail, as many survey respondents specifically talked about a rail service. And we also added prioritizing transit investment in high-need population areas, and then separating bike lanes and pedestrian networks from roadways, as according to the survey results. Additionally, we added under system and environmental preservation to maintain and improve our existing roadways, transportation infrastructure, and facilities, as that was one of the most important aspects of transportation for survey respondents. And that was the that was the end of the edits that we've done so far to the draft goals and objectives. Are there any questions?
Any questions from anyone? All right, thank you, ma'am. Are you moving on to the non-motorized?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll be presenting on item six. So we're in the process of updating the non-motorized transportation plan. And some of what we want to do with that plan is include research and international perspectives on what has worked for creating non-motorized infrastructure. And this will just, again, be a short presentation, 10 slides, just an intro, analyzing Dutch bike infrastructure, and also some data and research from the FHWA, and then how to adapt that local research to that research to the local area. So the Federal Highway Administration, or the FHWA, in conjunction with Dutch planning organizations, released a series of documents explaining how the Netherlands developed its bike and pedestrian networks. The FHWA also compiled research that detailed strategies that can be implemented to make roadways safer, and specifically safer for those who walk or bike. And these reports can be used to inform the non-motorized transportation plan and also the thoroughfare plan. And I just want to preface this presentation by stating that our intention with looking at international perspectives is not to copy and paste the infrastructure of another country, as the Netherlands has its own history, geography, economic, and legal system. So we are simply using the research as a way to kind of inform some of our own strategies. So it's not just taking one place and copying and pasting it in another. It's just some further information on how one country went from being more car-centric to having a more balanced transportation system. So within the Netherlands, in order to increase seamless bike movement and in order to help people adapt to bike and walking infrastructure, the bike and walkways had to be completely separated from roadways with a barrier. So that was the most popular tactic with improving biking and walking transportation, as people feel more uncomfortable when they're right next to the roadway or right next to fast moving vehicles. The only areas where vehicles and bicyclists shared the roads were those with roads with very slow speeds. But there was more of an emphasis on cycle tracks rather than share roads. Additionally, real-world experiments were used to determine which types of infrastructure worked. So Netherlands would implement temporary bike lanes or speed limit reductions. And the experiments that were successful that resulted in safe walking and biking infrastructure, those were the ones that were kept. Additionally, there was an effort to intentionally connect bike and walkways to public transit, because bike and pedestrian travel also reinforces public transit. The major priorities within the Netherlands for bicycle infrastructure is cohesion, attractiveness, safety, and comfortability. People want to feel safe and comfortable on their travels. So it was really important to set down a cohesive aesthetic design for the bike and walkways within the Netherlands. Additionally, these reports also talked a lot about complete streets. Complete streets are a great form of infrastructure, but it doesn't necessarily work in all contexts. And so that's something that was recognized by a lot of traffic engineers within the Netherlands. So we should aim to make as many roads complete streets as possible. However, there are some roads, such as high-speed roads or high-capacity roads, that should not necessarily be a complete street, but instead have a completely barrier-separated bike network. So if a road is high speed, maybe 45, 55 miles per hour, instead of it being a share road, it should have a cycle track running alongside it with a barrier separating it. So this is just additional research from the FHWA on bike and walking infrastructure that actually helps with reducing crashes. So bike lanes can reduce crashes up to 49%. High visibility crosswalks can reduce pedestrian injury crashes up to 40%. Rectangular rapid flashing beacons can increase motorist yielding rates up to 98%. Sidewalks can reduce pedestrian involved crashes from 65 to 89%. And letting pedestrians enter the crosswalk 3 to 7 seconds before vehicles are given a green light reduces pedestrian and vehicle crashes by 13%. And these are just links to the data resources that we are using to help inform the non-motorized transportation plan. Any questions?
Any questions from? Thank you, ma'am.
Okay. And I also, for the last portion of this item, want to notify everyone of a grant opportunity, the Innovative Grants RFP. So this is specifically about safety. It is a safety grant for a multitude of different transportation issues, from pedestrian and bicyclist to motorcycle safety to teen driving safety. It covers a variety of areas. And the great thing about this grant is a lot of different organizations are able to apply for this. It's definitely not strict at all on who is eligible to apply. So definitely look into this grant if you want to increase non-motorized safety or teen driving safety and want to create education programs to improve safety.
Well, and any of you who are interested in the grant, please get in touch with staff so that they can guide you into getting those paperwork done and get them in on time, okay? But that opportunity is there for all of us. Right, even some of your nonprofits who deal in that area, right? Let them know that the grant's available and staff is available to help them cover those things, all right? Okay, ready now? Thank you.
Okay, I will cover the next one, the freight plan. All of the fleet plan deliverables are available online. Actually, I'll just come over here. Just want to show you. The consultant has been working on the needs assessment. So basically, you receive and the fleet needs assessment, the existing and the future fleet and goods movement assessment, draft report, fleet performance measures report, forecasting of future freight growth draft report, regional freight profile and assessment report, and the truck parking inventory and truck restriction draft report and freight resilience draft report are all listed over here, and the very, very technical documents. Currently, they're working on the freight congestion bottleneck and safety security analysis, and that deliverable should be coming here at the end of December. And another part is the truck parking inventory and truck restriction draft. They're also revising on that one because the consultant has worked on have compiled the inventory of the truck parking supplies. But I did ask them to add some information on the demand. So what is the demand? So they're working on the demand part of it. So this draft will be revised. The consultant also started working on the land use freight land use assessment analysis and economic development market assessment for freight. and then environmental and community impact scan and analysis for freight, because a lot of the freight truck traffic going through the neighborhoods, some of those low-income neighborhoods, minority neighborhoods, the EJ areas. So we have to do some kind of analysis on that. So those would be the things that they are working on right now. In February, there will be a presentation on the progress. By that time, the task two, a freight needs assessment, will be done. And then in June, the recommendation will be done, and the freight infrastructure improvements and the land use improvements and final recommendations for infrastructure improvements and policy land use. So that will be done in June. So right now, they're still focusing on task 2 and 3, 4, 5. Thank you.
Okay. Are you doing the flood? Who's doing urban flooding?
Jasmine is going to do the urban flooding model.
Okay.
Hello again.
Mm-hmm.
So for the urban flooding model study update, there was not much since last meeting, since last month, but the UGA team held a project status meeting. I got a chance to sit in on that and just kind of hear some of the updates. One of the things the team requested was the four critical infrastructure GIS data. They have already reached out to some jurisdictions. We have to reach out to two more counties, Effingham and Bryan County, to ask for the same information if it's available, because this will go into the road vulnerability assessment. But outside of that, the consulting team will be present at the next TCC meeting for the steering committee meeting in February. If you all could, please do attend. Please do encourage others to attend as well. And that's all that I have for the urban flood model study updates.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you, ma'am. All right, we'll go to State Road 26, US 80.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. We appreciate this opportunity to bring a short presentation to you regarding the State Route 26 US 80 corridor study that we embarked on earlier, in the summer of this year. We are just wrapping up the existing conditions data collecting stage, and we wanted to present some of our findings here today, and then also to provide some contact information so that you can offer any input that you might have from your perspectives. So in the way of introductions, my name is Chris Marshingill. I'm with Kimley Horn and Associates. Also with me today is Rhodes Hunt, and I believe attending virtually is Denise Grabowski, who is heading up our stakeholder engagement plan. So our agenda today is to talk a little bit about the study goals, the purpose for this meeting and this presentation, a brief overview of the corridor, some of our initial findings from our research. We do have some ideas for some potential improvements, although those are not tested yet. Just based on some of our experience, we want to offer some of those things and then talk about next steps in the study process. So our study goals obviously are the canvas that we are working from. We want to identify and prioritize projects for the corridor. And this corridor extends from the Effingham-Chatham County line in the west to Burnside Boulevard on the east, which is very close to Garden City Terminal in Garden City. We also want to plan projects through the core MPO's MTP, and then ultimately program projects through the TIP. So I'm displaying for you some of the key MTP objectives. I won't read all these to you, but I want to point out that a number of these are in line with the presentations that we've seen earlier today, and I think the timing is very appropriate for this study. Obviously, safety, security, accessibility, and mobility are key components of the study. We want to lower crash frequencies and severity of crashes for all modes of transportation, including cars, trucks, pedestrians, and cyclists as well. One of the, the unspoken ones a lot of time are the emergency response times and evacuation routes. It's certainly something we want to keep in the forefront, and we want to reduce congestion for both commuters and for trucks. We want to continue to be a great place to do business. So today we're going to review some of the existing conditions that we found, that we identified along the corridor during our research. and we want to discuss some of the potential solutions to those problems. So with that, I'll bring Rhodes Hunt up that so that he can do a little quarter over before.
Good morning, everyone. Hope you're all doing well today. So as Chris mentioned, the corridor is about 12 miles long. So on the left side of your screen here, it starts at the Chatham County line, stretches through Bloomingdale, Pooler, crosses at City Savannah, then into Garden City and terminating at Burnside Boulevard near I-516. So when we study corridors like this, we really try to identify both intersections and segments. What I mean by segments are portions of the corridor that are similar in their characteristics, like their land use, their traffic, and their roadway typical section. So in that effort, we've identified six distinct study segments, which we'll talk a little bit more about later. In addition, we've studied 40 intersections along the corridor, which comprise about half of the intersection along this 12-mile stretch. So the slides that we'll cover in just a few minutes cover both the segment level and intersection level analyses that we've done thus far. So just a couple questions to help frame the conversation for us today. Where's traffic the heaviest? Where are there the most trucks? Which are the worst performing intersections? Where are there the most crashes? Which area has the greatest growth potential? And finally, is this a freight corridor or a commuter corridor? So let's talk about traffic, everybody's favorite thing to talk about. So the westernmost segment, segment one near Bloomingdale, has traffic volumes of 23,200 vehicles per day, or VPD. That picks up a little bit as you head towards Pooler in segment two with volumes of 26,200 VPD. Where we see traffic really ramp up is near I-95 in segment three with volumes of almost 40,000 VPD. As you get east of I-95, it drops pretty quickly. So in segment four, it drops to about 25,400 VPD. Segment five in residential Garden City is the lowest along this 12-mile stretch of about 21,500. And finally, in segment six, volumes are about 22,600. So big picture, most of the traffic is there near I-95 and it's lowest in the Garden City section. But we know that all traffic is not created equal. We have a lot of trucks here in town. So we have tried to identify the portion of the traffic that's comprised of heavy trucks. Segment one in Bloomingdale already has truck percentages of 16%. Segment two in Pooler actually has the lowest truck percentages of 11%. Segment three is 13%, but where you really see truck percentages go up is east of I-95 as you get in closer proximity to the port. So segments four and five, we see percentages of 17%, and they're over a fifth of all traffic in segment six. So that's a little bit of background on the segments. Now we'll transition into the intersections. And so when we try to study and evaluate performance at intersections, we do so by evaluating them in terms of their level of service. And we grade level of services from level service A to level service F. And you can think of those just like report grades in school, right? A is the best performance and F is something you really don't want to deal with. And so most agencies typically use level service D as a threshold at which they assume and treat intersections as operating acceptably. So intersections that you see here are those that operate worse than a level service D or E or F. A couple unsurprising ones, I would say, State Route 307 that is showing as level service E. And what's interesting about this one is it's actually gotten worse in the last year. Chris and I studied 307 from State Route 17 to State Route 25 last year. We saw that it was operating at level service D in 2021. So it's already gotten worse this year. So again, it's just communicating to us that it's a pretty big bottleneck, which we all know. Another interesting one is Westside Boulevard, showing as level of service F. There is a signal that's been permitted at this intersection and will soon start construction. So we do expect that performance will improve at Westside Boulevard specifically. So in addition to this capacity analysis, we supplement that with some good old fashioned field work. So the image that you see here on the screen, the thick red line, represents the observed queuing that we noticed while we were out there during the morning. So again, just two big bottlenecks that we know about are I-95 and State Route 307. At I-95 specifically, in the eastbound direction, so everyone going towards town or towards the port, the eastbound queues actually extend all the way to Pooler City Hall, Tom, near I-95. And even worse at 307, they extend for almost a mile in the eastbound direction past and up to Pine Barren Road. Additionally, we know some queuing at the southbound I-95 off-ramp and at Chatham Parkway. So a couple pictures to help illustrate this. This is the off-ramp that I mentioned before. And you can see in the background of the picture that queuing is really backing up all the way to where the ramp kind of diverts from the interstate. So some pretty significant queuing here. We do understand that there is a quick response project that GDOT has planned that will lengthen some of the storage in the auxiliary lanes. So we do think if that project is constructed, that will improve operations here. And then this is at Chatham Parkway, looking west at eastbound traffic, where queues tend to accumulate for about a quarter mile or so, and they actually block often Kessler Avenue from being able to get out onto US 80. So here's some results in the PM. You notice a few more intersections here than in the morning, but a couple of repeat offenders, if you will, Old Dean Forest Road, Kessler Avenue, and West Side. An interesting addition, I think, is Coleman Boulevard. There, similar to West Side, there is a signal that's actually already under construction at Coleman Boulevard. And so with that and the signal at West Side, we do expect operations to improve within this really critical stretch of US 80. So again, some afternoon observations. Notice how it's actually the inverse of the morning. So everyone leaving town and leaving the port heading west leads to some queuing in the westbound direction, again at I-95 and at 307. At I-95 in particular, queues extend almost a mile, again, past Pine Barren Road. And similarly at 307, they extend almost to Griffin Avenue and Residential Garden City. We did see some similar queuing on the southbound off ramp at I-95 and at Chatham Parkway. We also know some queuing at the State Route 17 Cherry Street intersection in Bloomingdale, which led to some of that poor level of service that we showed on the slide before. So here's some more pictures to help communicate this. This is at I-95. Looking east at westbound traffic, notice how queuing is already extending past the adjacent intersection to the east at Bourne Avenue. So again, some pretty significant queue here. And then similarly at our favorite intersection at State Route 307, we see similar queues in the westbound direction. But notice the complexion of the traffic here, right? It's a little bit more concentrated with heavy trucks. So that's some background on traffic, and we'll real quick go over crashes. When you look at crash data, you do so in the most consecutive and most recent five-year period. So in this instance, for this project, it's from 2017 to 2021. In this five-year period, about 2,100 crashes have been reported, and unfortunately, three of those resulted in fatalities. But on the bright side, the severity of crashes tends to be pretty low, as about 93% of them have been reported as property damage only, or PDO. Of the six segments that I introduced at the beginning, five of them have crash rates that exceed the statewide average. And when you annualize those costs using formulas from FHWA, that equates to a cost of about $20 million per year. So what all this says and communicates is that there's a clear need for safety improvement and investment along the stretch. So let's talk a little bit about crash rates. And again, we're looking at these based on the segments. The way we normalize and kind of compare our roadways across the state is with a lovely tongue twister called 100 million vehicle miles traveled, or HMVMT. So segment one is the only segment of the six that has a lower crash rate average than that of the state, with about 160 crashes per HMVMT. Where you see crashes really ramp up is in segments two and three near I-95. In fact, segment three has rates of over 800 crashes per HMVMT. And for comparison, the statewide average is a little less than 180. So you can see, you know, these are much more significant crash rates than that of the average. And segments four, five, and six, while not quite as high, still have rates that are well in excess of the average. And with that, I will turn it back over to Chris.
Thank you, Rhodes. With a lot of information to digest, and we appreciate your attention and your patience. So I want to talk a little bit now about some of the overview summary of our findings. Obviously, US 80 State Route 26 is a major freight corridor for our, and is very important to our community and to our region. It also crosses a number of major freight corridors, and those are listed there for you. So some of the considerations that are going into our recommendations that we'll be studying as part of the project development phase. Fortunately, along this corridor, there are two rail crossings, both NS and CSX, but they are grade separated crossings, unlike the 307 corridor, which has a number of at-grade crossings. So CSX and Norfolk Southern are crossed by US 80 via the Kicklider overpass. Couple more pictures here just to illustrate some of the dynamics of the traffic that we see. Very important freight corridors at State Route 17 connector, Jimmy Deluxe Parkway, also Chatham Parkway and State Route 307 in the freight vein. From the perspective of pedestrians and cyclists, The corridor is designated as Georgia Bike Route 85, so we certainly have to keep that in mind as we're planning for non-motorized solutions along the corridor. This is also known as the Savannah River Run from a bicyclist perspective. There are recommendations in the non-motorized transportation plan for a couple of different segments along the corridor. Some of those include separated path and trail, and then other recommendations include concurrent bike lanes. So we'll be vetting those as part of this study as well. Certainly the variability of the typical section throughout the corridor will dictate where we can include pedestrian and bicycle facilities, and we'll be making some recommendations on how to change some of those, revise some of those such that we're closing gaps in the existing network. Overall goal is to provide greater connectivity to existing recreational and commercial facilities to encourage more bicyclists and pedestrians. So these are a few pictures to illustrate some of the existing pedestrian and cycle facilities. You can tell from a couple of these that we're lacking in some areas. Certainly the bottom right-hand picture of the cyclist with no bike lane, obviously a designated bike route crossing the Kicklider overpass. From a transit perspective, there's one transit stop as part of CAT Route 3B along the corridor, and the majority of the corridor is outside of the transit district, so it stands to reason that you don't see an extensive route along this corridor. This is a blow up of the section of Route 3B in the eastern end of the project near I-516, and you can see that one stop. We know from our 307 study and some of the preliminary work that we've done on this study that there is a latent demand for transit and affordable transportation modes along the corridor, and that's something that we'll keep in the forefront as we move forward with recommendations. As I mentioned, the prior studies suggest need for transit expansion. So in summary, access management will be a key focus for us. Most of the corridor is separated by a two-way left turn lane. At some point, we will need to control that access more, and we will be implementing measures such as raised median, some innovative intersections to minimize the number of conflict points for traffic. Capacity and safety are both going to be key components or key concerns at intersections as we investigate specific intersection solutions. And then finally, the non-motorized modes of transportation will be in the forefront as we evaluate needs for transit, pedestrian, and bicycle. Some of the potential improvements that we've identified to date are listed here. Obviously, Rose mentioned the I-95 interchange. There's some need for capacity improvements and safety improvements there, as there are at the State Route 307 and Dean Forest interchange. GDOT has a freight connected vehicle network along State Route 307 and State Route 21. There's an opportunity along this corridor for the expansion of that network, because that's something we want to keep in mind. I mentioned the access control opportunities with a raised median and some driveway consolidation, and then some innovative intersections. There's a couple more pictures to look at here. This is the Pine Barren Road intersection at US 80 on the left. So some fairly simple intersection improvements to improve safety and operations there. Contrast that with the picture on the right, which is a single point urban interchange that we've identified for the intersection of State Route 307. This one really surprised me in the previous study. I thought I could fix that intersection with typical intersection improvements, but the traffic volumes are just too high there. We really need to take State Route 26 and US 80 over 307 and then connect the two via an interchange. So next steps, we have a preliminary stakeholder meeting coming up. I think, is that this month or is that next month? That's Monday. Following that, we'll be developing some alternatives and concepts, and then we'll come back together for another MPO presentation to discuss what we plan to submit, I'm sorry, what we plan to present to the public in the form of a public information open house meeting. Following that, we will discuss with our stakeholders the results of that meeting and our findings, and then we'll culminate those discussions with a draft report that we will submit for review and comment. And then we will incorporate final comments, present to the TCC, present to this board again, and then wrap up our study with a final report, likely in the fall of next year. So that's all I have for you this morning. We're certainly willing to entertain any questions.
All right, any questions from anyone? All right, let's.
Yes, sir. I'm Faye DiMassimo. I'm the CEO of Chatham Area Transit.
Yes, ma'am.
I would want to make sure that on the, I was looking at the slides that you were presenting around the transit activity and the potential for transit activity, particularly around connecting for commuters and the warehousing and so forth. There's an extensive amount of detailed work that we're doing right now, both through our transit development plan and our master transit plan, and service expansion activities that are ongoing already. And I would really encourage you to connect with us on those, and let's make sure that that operational analysis that we've already done and sort of a better snapshot of what our plans are, both near term and mid longer term, that really need to be reflected in this or fully integrated in your next round of work efforts. So I'll get with you on the way out and make sure you have the appropriate contacts on our side.
Yes, ma'am. I appreciate that. And we also have CAT on our stakeholder advisory committee. Mm-hmm. So we've been coordinating with them some to this point. As we mentioned, our first stakeholder advisory committee meeting is next week. And I know that your plans are under development as well. So we'll certainly monitor the pulse of that. As I mentioned earlier, we did identify with the State Route 307 study significant latent demand for affordable transportation, particularly related to some of the warehouse developments.
Right.
And also, you know, those were sometimes seasonal, but a number of those business owners or warehouse owners have reached out to CETA and talked about the need for transit and more affordable transportation modes. So there is a latent demand.
But this definitely directly connects to the work effort that we have ongoing right now around microtransit, Vanpool Express, commuter options and so forth. And so, and we've actually got a lot of detailed work done, and I just want to make sure that we're staying in alignment and that these things are working together. So I'll check in with you on the way out and make sure we're getting you to the right folks that are doing our work too to integrate that. But thank you.
That's great. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Go ahead.
Tim Cowan, Effingham County Manager. And first off, I appreciate your involving Effingham in this process and the stakeholders and what have you. But my question, one thing that has probably changed since the start of this study is the what's happening up the road here with Hyundai. Has that in any way change your models, or how are you trying to address something like that that's going to have a material effect, but in the future?
That's an excellent question. So where we are now is we're wrapping up the existing conditions report and moving into the projections. So the Hyundai mega site is absolutely a major consideration for us. It's not included in the current travel demand model. We know that there will be a greater demand, and we're seeing it in Pooler already, a greater demand for multifamily residential developments. There are a couple that are popping up along the corridor. So we are coordinating with other consultants and other agencies as these new developments are presented or are submitted for permitting. And we're including a number of those in our projections. So we know what the existing land use is along the corridor. There are some zoning change or zoning requests that are out there, and we're asking the municipalities to notify us of those as they're submitted, such that we can complete our projections with the most current data.
Any other questions? Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Sir, thank you.
Appreciate it. All right, can we go on now to information reports? On the GDOT project first?
I'll just open the file so Kitty can give the presentation. Kitty, can you see the screen?
Yes, ma'am, thank you.
Okay.
All right.
1 and 2, the bridge replacements over Savannah River and Middle River on State Route 25. The final plan design is ongoing. 3, safety improvements on Project State Route 204 from 21 to Rio Road is ongoing. Design is in progress. 15675, safety improvements on I-16 at Chatham Parkway is still holding for let in June. 1574 and 705, that's 5 and 6, widening and bridge replacement on State Route 404 spur US 17 from northeast of Savannah to Back River continues in concept. 17414, the bridge replacement at Bull River, next milestone is environmental dock approval, and the bridge replacement over Lazaretto Creek, the next milestone is right-of-way authorization. 521855, State Route 26 from I-516 to Victory Drive is on schedule for January 23 let, and State Route 30 at Hodgeville roundabout continues in concept. For the construction, all the projects are progressing. Line 2 and 3 are wrapping up. Some strapping material has been ordered, and then line 2 will be finishing up. And the State Route 307 spur is just all the paving's done, but they're just waiting for a signal loop acceptance. And those two will be wrapped up and they'll fall off. And everything else is progressing normally.
Actually, I think I just saw a mistake for the Islands Expressway. The last date is 19.
Where is it right at? Oh, sorry.
No problem.
Is that 2000? Yeah.
I'll get that one fixed. Thank you.
Yeah, we will crack that. Okay.
And let's let it up for the date on there should be what?
2019. Yeah, 2019. Yeah, it's not 100 years ago.
I see what it is. Okay. All right.
Okay, Stephanie is not online, but the Stephanie Rossi actually provided this report on the US 17 widening project. Mm-hmm. So the information is presented over here.
Okay. Chatham County.
Thank you. Let's see. The first three projects that we have for the federal aid ones, I-16 at Jimmy DeLoach, Chevis Road, and Garrard Avenue, all of those are progressing in PE. Let's see, we had the public information open house was held for Garrard Avenue on November 3rd, and the concept team meeting was held on November 30th of this year. Let's see, going to the pre-construction, the local projects. Quaco Road widening, an update on that. The demolition project to clear the right of way for phase two will go out this month. Little Neck Road construction right of way acquisition is ongoing. Skidaway Road, the redesign is ongoing. And Wall Tower Road slope stabilization, I believe that one, we have acquired the right of way and permitting. So it's just a question, I think, of funding at this point. Let's see. The traffic signal at Lyman Hall and US 80 sidewalks, hopefully the right of way acquisition is getting wrapped up so we can put those out for bid soon. Green Island Road. Trail right. should get started soon. We're still in negotiation with the highest rated design firm. And let's see, Johnny Mercer Wall Tower is also, that's under design. And all three of the construction projects we have are now complete.
Right.
Have any questions about any of those?
Any questions from anyone?
Madam Chairman, just do we have a estimated completion date for Quackle Road widening?
It's got to go in phases, we got to get the demolition done first and get the trees cleared and then get utilities moved. And that's a little bit difficult to determine exactly how long that'll take, and then do the actual road work. So it was probably going to be maybe, a couple of years before the road work is complete.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, any other questions? All right, City of Savannah.
Do we have City of Savannah online?
Don't have anything. All right.
Okay, so City of Savannah project is actually attached. So if you're interested, so they only have a four projects.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
How are y'all doing today? My name is William Sedgwick, and I'll be representing CAT for our status update for November. To start off, our ferry purchase construction, that IFB closed in October of 2022. For our paratransit vehicles, this manufacturing issues have continued to delay this project. We are currently working on revising the state contract as the shortage has continued to delay this order. Negotiations have currently been underway for the procurement of six paratransit vehicles by American Compliant that are currently manufactured and available for delivery.
Billy, I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you from here. We do have an update on that didn't make it into this report. We are taking delivery in January of 10 new paratransit vehicles that are electric. So we have been able to work that out, and that was how much our budget would permit at this point, given the budgetary constraints we have. But we are taking delivery in January of 10.
Thank you for that. For our diesel bus replacement, this is currently in process. The bus order was placed in December of 2021 for 335-foot buses, and that estimated completion date is June 2023. Our ITS Clever Devices hardware installed on all of our ferry vessels back in September of 2022. However, the final phase completion date has been postponed until the maintenance of all of our ferry vehicle, or ferry, I'm sorry, our maintenance on all of the ferries are completed. For our ferry boat maintenance facility and ferry dock, we have continued the coordination with FTA on that grant execution. For our electric bus replacement, that is still in process. It was ordered back in April of 2022. And this completion date has been delayed due to rollout plans and studies currently being conducted by HDR for our zero emission buses. Our master transit plan and implementation strategies is currently focused on market and ridership analysis, as well as stakeholder outreach. For our TDP and COA, these funds were awarded and executed back in May of 2022, with the first phase starting in August, at the end of August, beginning of September 2022, and the system survey completed in October 2022. Our consultants at WRA have provided a high-level overview of the COA TDP, which is focused on the short-term recommendations for the three CAT services, CAT buses, Bell's Ferry, and CAT Mobility, which is our ADA paratransit service. For our AOPP grant, Areas of Persistent Poverty, funds were awarded in FTA's AOPP program on June 23rd, 2022. This study is planned for fiscal year 2023, with the CAT anticipation will be completed through our on-call planning contract scheduled for award in December 2022. This study will conclude the potential to connect emerging job centers and areas with high level of racial inequity or persistent poverty. And lastly, our American Rescue Plan, ARP route restoration analysis. These funds were awarded back in July 2022 at 100% federal match. The route restoration study will be completed by the end of fiscal year 2023, and this project will allow CAP to provide accessibility to underserved communities with service across jurisdictions. My apologies. All right, that's it. Any questions?
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Move on to the airport.
Thank you. Jim is online.
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two projects ongoing, two pretty much closed out. The first one, security checkpoint expansion, demo's begun. Started removing all the concrete apron, getting ready to start putting utilities in the ground. And the second project, again, just getting started demo air cargo project in the southeast quadrant. Demo has begun on that, and again, relocating utilities and getting ready to take down some hangars and stuff. So just two projects, but two pretty big projects on going on at the airport. Any questions? That's my report. Thank you.
All right, any questions for the airport? Hearing none. All right, Tip.
Sally has been coordinating with GDOT, Chatham County, City of Savannah, Pooler. So any agency that actually has our the MPO controlled Vital 30 funds, 301 funds, CRESA funds. So she has been coordinating with all of them and updating this table. So she has got all the information.
All right, and let me say now. I got glasses, but I need a microphone. All right, let's see, can we enlarge this next time around, even if it's got to take more than one slide? Okay, so we can read it. All right, thank you. Anything else now? All right. Any comments that we have from anyone? Our next core MPO board meeting will be February 22nd at 2023 at 10 a.m. All right. Any more? Hearing no business, may I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved, Miley.
Second, Pamela Barr.
Probably motion and second that we adjourn.
Yeah, we want to take a moment to wish everybody happy holidays.
All right.
If you're around, we're having our holiday lunch and
let me say as we closed out, I thank the staff for starting my holiday off right. Today is my birthday. And they made sure that you had birthday gift. So please don't leave without, and let me just thank you all for what you've done. We so declare this meeting is adjourned.